suppose you when you went to that home you remember it. Now you just let me try the morning. I'm preaching that. And it went on from there. And somebody said, that's baseball. I said, no, it's not baseball. They talk about friendship.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What was your... And those players in general, how did they feel toward the writers and the radio guys? There was no big television stuff then, but the writers, the beat writers with the A's. Did the players trust them, like them, dislike them, distrust them?
No, they liked all the writers. Mark Morrow, Kelly. There were two of them that carried both sides, you know, for the Phillies and for us, of course. They, of course, explained it there more so on the Phillies side and the Athletic side. But Kelly and Art Morrow, they were definitely writers for us.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no problem as far as they running the thing down. In fact, Kelly and Morrow, why it was set to all four of them. We used to give them meal money too when they go on the trip. I was managing the trip. You'd go in the club car while it was time on this particular night, give these guys on the ground and back down. They would battle for us all the time, but the more I ever told them, this particular night, you'd go in the club car and they're in there having a big dinner and so forth. And when Wally and I both walk in, they say, give it to him, he'll take care of it to the waiter. I said, what are you talking about? Check for the dinners. I say, wait a minute. I just gave you guys a couple $100 for your dinners. They laughed, that's all right, they walked out. That's why I had faith.
But anyway, how did you do that? I mean, physically, how did you hand out the meal money? Was it a little envelope or something? Go through the train.
Business secretary, traveling secretary. Right? He'd walk through and give her the name. Everybody got the same.
Who was that?
McFarlane.
Benny McFarlane?
Great guy. Great guy. But again, as I said, it didn't change anything as far as the problems financially they were having. Everything he did on the road was like any big league ball. But the writers were the ones that I finally had to say to them, you guys that are anti and want this ball club to leave, I said, you're going to find yourselves out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
They said, what do you mean? I said, well, they can't pick up four more writers from the Athletics and put them on the staff for the Phillies. Don't you understand that? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, we never thought of things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, they're all careful. It ended up that way. Four or five guys for the job, as far as writers.
Mm-hmm.
They may have done something else in the business, but as far as sports writers, they were gone. Had to happen.
How were you told that they were, or how did you learn that they were moving to Kansas City and that you weren't part of
it? It was right after the season was over. 54. I had gone to the World Series with Cleveland and the Giants. And we were at the Commodore Hotel. And I think it was right after the first game when Cleveland got beat badly. Amazed me that they catch something like that. That they were in a meeting with reference to selling the ball club because it had been around. Said I don't know how many times in Philadelphia when we were there. And finally it was consummated. So, Mr. Johnson called me and he said, Eddie, I just want to let you know that I just purchased the Philadelphia Athletics and we're going to transfer them to Kansas City. And I said, fine. He said, gee, that's the way it has to be. And I said, well, I guess I'll be going along with you. He said, well, you're the manager as of this minute. Yeah, that's right. In fact, you'll be with the ball. I said, well, I'm glad to hear that. So I said, well, when the series is over, would you like to go? No, he said, no. I want to go back to Kansas City and talk to him. He said, no, he says, we'll take our time, go on home and get squared away as to what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. But, so I got home, and I said, pick up the newspaper one morning and Boudreaux was the manager. And I wasn't included in the players.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't included. Joe was. I took Joe. I called him and I said, Mr. Johnson, I said, understand that. I was a playing manager. I said, I can still play. I asked Lou. I said, I can still play shortstop. Well, he said, Lou feels as though he's going to go along with what he's got. I said, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else.
So, yeah, I mean, they gave you a release, in effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went to spring training in 56. 55
in Boston, yeah.
No, I went to spring training with Cleveland.
Cleveland.
Yeah, I was home one day and just spring training just about to start. And Greenberg called me. Eddie says, what are you doing? I say, I just found out I'm a free agent. He says, fine. I said, I want to know. And I said, I'd like to invite you down to the ballpark and give you an opportunity to play with us. I said, hey, that's great. You want to talk contract? He said, no, why don't you come to spring training and we'll go from there. I said, fine. So I knew Al Luke. I have to do it. So I went to spring training and sat down with Greenberg and Al and no arguing about my salary. That's fine. I said, but now I can understand what I'm going to say. I want $10,000. I said, he's what for? I said, hey, I'm a free agent. First time in my life. I said, I can get $10,000. I'd like to have it. Well, then he's left. So I'm out there playing every day. Salary's no problem. Playing every day. And I'm going to pitch for him. And Lucas, when the hell are you going to sign? I said, hey. Tell Greenberg to get that $10,000 friend now. I don't think he's going to give it to you. Because I'll tell you what, I'll give it to you. I said, no, Al. Huh. Wait, go the other way. Go the other way. I said, no, Al. I said, I don't want it from you. I want it from Greenberg. I said, he got it when he was a player. Now I want it because I was a player. He said, well, I don't think he's going to give it to you. So after you're on the road and in San Francisco, you know, I was a villain. I lived in Burlington. So I came in and Al said, hey, you know, Greenberg said not to play. He said, Jesus Christ, it's going to be easy. He said, I'm going to play. I said, yeah. Well, he said, you won't give it a 10. I said, now, what would you do? He said, I'll tell you what, I'll give it to you. And I said, no. He told me I can do it. I said, no, I don't want it from you. I want it from Greenberg. Greenberg wouldn't. So I said, what's up? I can't play that. He said, that night, boom. Because I just lost my shortstop. How are you? I said, I'm in pretty good shape. I'm playing. He said, I know what's going on out there. He said, what do you want? I told him. He said, you got it. I said, but, how about 10,000? Oh, yeah, they told me about that. He said, you got it. That's no problem. Yeah, I know, yeah. Break my hand. I hit the pitch. He does that. Call me like this. Hit the ceiling. Yeah, I just take that back like that. And I didn't even know it hit me. And I was stepping in the box, getting the umpire's time, called the blue hand. There's blood left. Called the trainer out and just sprayed some blood. So I finished up, manned the bases, and left. Williams is going to call me. So I called Mike. They can play. So I said, go ahead. We'll put some on there for you. So I took you to the Harvard hospital. So and he said, it's just a little. It's a little. I said, well, I can't grab the bat and I can't catch it. So I was out there 6 weeks and I was out in Kansas City and I gave it a try and down on my smoothie. It's gone. So they sent me to the hospital and took another X-ray and I instantly I caught that on the wall. Just made it a fraction, complete fraction. So I'm done. I got 6 weeks. I just keep my eye on while they're on the road, I'm out there pitching the talking about the best price. So they were treating me beautifully, but I just said to Joe, God, cut it. I said, I can play. And I said, Mike, I didn't tell him. They used to call me up in the press box after the game, and Mr. Milky and Jim White and said, he'd be out there 25-year-old, 50-year-old Scotch since. Great people. So then I figured, well, at least I'll be called up next year. All the spring. Going to Dalton, yes. We're going to take over the franchise in San Francisco. Okay. No, he says, we're going to need a West Coast franchise. To see it. I don't want a manager. God, the club with all those guys you got. I said, I'll tell you what about them. I know this ball club. He says, you know these guys. I said, damn right. I said, well, spoiled brats. I said, I can't put up with this. So anyway, I accepted it. And that's what he told me. Don't worry about it. He says, some of the best we got. They didn't send it because Murphy was the director of the minor league clubs for the Red Sox. And Cronin hired me and moved him with the seal. Came to spring training and he said, Daddy, you don't know our procedures here and what to do and the style of ball play. I said, hey, I've seen the plan and basically what to do. Well, he said, Rodney and Charlie and I will come down for a week and we'll take over and show you. And that's what they did. And we're sitting there in the stands. Like the spectators. And they let him know. I knew what was up there. Murphy didn't give me any players.
Was this Johnny Murphy?
Yeah. Didn't give me any players. Didn't sell me the top players. Some of these B and C and D players. That's the best I got. And I'd write reports. And everybody began to write a report. He was great. He did this. They were all great. We're still losing ball games. How come they're all so good and they're losing ball games? So I knew it. Finally, I just went up to Jerry Donovan and said, Jerry, I don't say I'm the greatest manager in the world, but with these guys, they're individuals and they're not going to play to win. Whatever they can do for themselves, fine. But Haywood Sullivan, he'd catch her like that. I think they gave him $85,000 out of the University of Miami and to sign. And he was the worst catcher I ever saw in baseball. He couldn't catch a ball. The pitcher used to come up and say, get somebody to catch the ball. Not any problem. Jeez. He had hands twice as big as mine. So I went up to him and I said, Sully, why don't you get a glove that you can put your hand in? He used to catch with his fingers. His hands were so big that he couldn't control the ball. He said, what do you mean? I said, get a glove that you can put your hand in and catch the ball. I said, the pitcher's screaming, you can't catch the ball. You drop it. Catch it. I said, you can't throw anybody out. And we got into it. I said, hey, I don't care what you say. You're the worst catcher in the league. I said, there's no doubt that you are. Anyway, we're not. All these guys have been given 70,000, 80,000 bonuses, and you talk to them, and they'd say, well, that's the best we can do. See you later. So I told Donovan, I said, get somebody else. So they did. Very next week, which was in June, Joe Gordon came in, and I said, well, good luck. He says, these guys aren't going to win. So he didn't win, but the next year they loaded him up. I got Joe back. Great guy.
And that was your last baseball connection?
I just walked away because of the insincerity of people that said that, hey, you'll be a baseball for the rest of your life. Talk about you want to mention gun baseball. And then Kay Paul was in Houston at the time. And we found out. He called me, said he was so remarkable for baseball. I said, well, make it off. He says, well, tell you what, how about a scouting job? I says, well, she says, I hate that scouting job. I'm a baseball bum. Sitting around watching this, watching that, go watch this. I said, I've gone through with some of these guys. I can't do that. I couldn't sit there. I said, I could be evaluated if someone turns in 10 or 12 players, and I've seen them. I could say, yes, this is Mr. Bam, I can do that. But I said, I'm not going out there and sit there Paul gave us four rings, and another for three, and another for seven.
Beat the bushes, yeah.
And I said, no, I said, we wouldn't want to do that. And David and I were good friends. We were great friends. And that's when I said, no, ended up in Honolulu with Wilson Sporting Group, representing the woman.
Mm.
So Honolulu Sporting Group, she's a great job. I stayed there for almost 11 years.
Mm.
It was great, really enjoyed it. So,
who was the pitcher who broke your hand?
I think it was Harry Bird. Yeah.
Mm. That was a bad trade all around.
Yeah. I think it was Harry.
Was it at all awkward, difficult? You're playing shortstop, you're managing. When you felt it was time to change the pitcher,
no,
pitcher.
I didn't play that much. As you look it up, Joe, the base game. I played a few games here and there because I saw what was happening, and I told Joe, asked him,
mm-hmm.
I said, "You got to come out and do what you can do because you can probably stay in the big next year and have a decent year." He didn't have a great division there, a band here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the Yankees picked him up as utility.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have a pitcher talk you out of taking him out?
No.
Or try?
Well, they tried. Oh, geez, I'd go one more hit. I'll never forget that was everybody. We were in Washington. And Peters was the hitter. And we would have two runs. Pitcher, I can't recall. I didn't get more. I think it was different. So I said, gee, tomorrow knows I think I'm on someone. I can't put him on. He said, what do you want? My face is high. I thought, oh, this man's second. Who's the second? So I went out. I said, all right, let me say this. You know, what we talked about different. He said, yeah. I said, don't give him any fastballs. I'll go. Anyways, I don't care if it's inside, outside. Nothing up over the ball. Give him breaking balls, change ups, anything. Just keep the ball down. Sat down. Boom, first pitch, fastball right there. Now the ball. No, something. Then you can't go to the pitcher and say, God, you're terrible.
Yeah.
He tried, but didn't do it. That's about the best he can say.
What do you say when you go out to take a pitcher out? Do you say anything?
Oh, yeah. All I used to go out and say to them, look, I made some bad pitches. And we talked about it. I made some bad pitches. And I got so-and-so coming up and I was in this situation. Would you want to be hit the ball? And I was interested. God, don't give him a ball over the middle of the plate. This is something you can't take a pitch on the outside hands or the inside hands. Just don't give him a ball over the middle of the plate. That he can kill you. Just keep the ball someplace to talk about. And we talked about the situation with the ball inside or outside, whatever it was. You know. Say, okay. Say, all right, I got him. Still have good stuff. I am. That's all.
Hmm.
It worked out fine. You were the dish.
Yeah.
It didn't. You were a bum again.
So when you went out to take a picture out.
Well, take a picture out.
Yeah, is there anything that you should say?
No, definitely. Just say, hey, you had it. That's it. There's no sense going anymore. That's it.
Yeah.
If you procrastinate, you're going to end up in trouble.
Yeah.
Like I did with Dittmar that night. I shouldn't take it. To anybody. It would have been a change, and maybe he wouldn't have hit a home run.
Yeah.
And as it happened, he did.
I don't remember. Did you say that you got a raise for managing and playing?
Oh, yeah.
In 54?
Yeah. But now I'm the manager, I got to get a raise. Yeah, I can.
Do you remember the last conversation you had with Mr. Mack?
The last conversation, to be positive, just when we signed, I got the picture. Signed the contract as manager of the ball club. He wished me luck and said you would be a great player for me. And I know that you'll be something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Roy was there.
Yeah, he's now 91 years old. 92 years old.
That's right. He got up when he was late in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was it. No, he was all right in that sense. He knew where he was and he just knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He used to go to the games.
Yeah, he'd go to the games.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a mezzanine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Should have.
Yeah. The umpires. Did you ever get thrown out of a game as a manager? Is that you?
No, there wasn't that many instances where I had a real argument, really.
The as a hitter, who would you rate as the top umpires where you knew they were going to be fair and accurate in the calls of balls and strikes?
Well, most all of them are very good. A couple of them are. Let me put it this way. Every umpire that you got involved with, you knew how his calls were. Whether he was consistently called high strikes, low strikes, and inside or outside. And every one of them you knew. It's like knowing the players.
Mm-hmm.
You knew the umpires as to how, especially behind the plate, how they call
mm-hmm.
the pitches. If you didn't, you had a problem. Because you knew what the pitch is going to do, or he's going to try to do this to you. Because you hit against him so often, you know what he's going to try to do. And I'll never forget one time, Rommel, Ed Rommel. He was behind the plate in Washington. And, situation like that, but I know that he called me out on the pitch. I turned around and I said, "Mr. Rommel, you missed another one." He said, "What do you mean I missed another one?" I said, "God damn it, the ball is inside, at least 3 inches." He says, "Eddie, believe me, it hit the black part." I said, "It did?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, it's a strike." He said, "It's a strike, you're on." I said, "Okay." Wally Moses is sitting there for dinner. In comes Rommel by himself, going to sit down and have dinner. I say, "Yeah, sit down. What the hell?" "You don't mind?" I said, "No, what the hell? Sit down and have dinner." Sits down, he gets the menu, reaches in his pocket and takes out his glasses. I said, "Wait a minute. What do you mean?" I said, "Why don't you wear those things when you're umpiring?" I said, "You told me out on the pitch you got the black part on the inside, and tonight you can't read the menu?" I said, "Honestly, Ed." I said, "Well, if you can't see, what the hell? Put them on. I put them on." "What did you expect? I'm going out there and umpire with glasses? At least you'd be able to see the ball." But it was the truth. That's what he did. No, I got one. I don't think I ever got thrown out. Only when I was manager one day in Detroit, bases loaded. Names and hitters I forget now. Bases loaded, we were ahead, we had 3 runs, 9 points. And, anyway, it's a line drive in the left center field. And, with that, the guys are taking off, it's 2 outs. Watching, as we watched, the third guy at first base ran back to make sure the ball wasn't going to be caught or not. And he's back, and the runner ran past about 20 feet. Past him, that's it. 3 outs, that's it. Nobody mm-hmm. scores, okay? So I'm just waiting. Again, Rommel was at the plate. I said, "Mr. Rommel, are you going to call the guy out or not?" "What are you talking about?" I said, "He passed the runner at first base, didn't he?" Already, so I was watching the ball. "Wait a minute." I said, "I'll tell you what. I'm going to talk to the rest of the bumper." So I'm out the guy at first. I'm like, "Who the hell are you?" "Where the hell were you when the ball was going out of the ballpark? Did you watch the base runners?" Eddie says, that's my position right now. I said, "Oh, shit." I said, "The guy at second base is the guy supposed to watch the ball in left center while the man is there, not you." I said, "The guy passed the man at first base." I said, "The inning's over and we win the ball game." I didn't even see that. I can't call. I went to every umpire. And they all had the same thing. We were watching the ball. "This is ridiculous. I just, everybody in the park knows what took place, and now you're going to let it go, and the game's over, and they win?" And he says, the other said the same thing. He says, "That's it."
Mm-hmm.
"And that's true. That's it. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Shoot him?" Not the only time I had a run in. Not a run in.
Did you ever see Mr. Mack call an umpire over to discuss the decision?
not very often, just once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, I think you heard the story about me. It was the very first game in Philadelphia. I was playing the second place. Played second base, and I got the ball from Melvin Bell, and I feel the guy was maybe 3 feet away when I had the ball, and I did this steal down and block the ball. Down. Cold in second. Wait a minute. I didn't know, but he was out over the back. Right. I go, all right. I hit him right in the face on my head. He said, what the hell are you doing? I says, I got up. I said, I don't know where the hell you were. I said, by the way, what'd you call that guy? He says, he's safe. I says, God damn you. I says, he's... No way, I said, he didn't even get to the base. I said, after all, this is something that you guys got to do. You know, I have a little exception, but anyway, he said, that's enough. I said, what do you mean? Let me tell you something, you're doing this thing. I said, yeah, it's my first game. I said, well, why are you saying this? He says, you keep this up, you'll never get a close call again at second base. I said, do you mean, oh, Charlie,
Barry?
Barry. Charlie only said, you mean that? He said, God damn right. I said, okay. Listen to this. I'm going in right now. Tell Mr. Mack what you said. Exactly what you said. You can go from there. If he says something to you, I said it. Watch me. Right in, sat down, Mr. Mack told him the story. He said that to you, boy? I said, yes, he did. Sure, I said, positive. So he waited a little game. He said, stay right here, boy. Mr. Barry's going out. They all have to come in the same area. Mr. Barry, I want to talk to you, sir. My player said you said this to him at that play at second base. He later, when I told him, Charlie looks at me and says, you did. I just told you I was going to play. I said, I can't play there without having a chance. So Mr. Mack, it was just the spur of the moment to come up out of the play there and pushed me back, and I guess I got a little out of hand myself, and I did say that. He said, well, I have to apologize. And I apologize to you, Ed, and I apologize to Mr. Mack. He said, well, it wasn't intentional. And Mr. Mack said, I'm glad you said that, Charlie, because I'll tell you what. If you didn't do what you just did, apologize to this man and me, your job is gone. And he had that power. He'd go like to Harrington and say, get him out. But you see, they can't do those things.
Yeah.
Another time, umpires. I got along great. Passarella, Mark Passarella. So not to say he was associated with gamblers, but I don't think he was. But he knew some people in New York that he was associated with. Play at second base one time. Noticed on the board about not cussing the umpire. Because of television. So they put on all the boards and the lake and the umpires. So I played second base in Detroit, and I knew that I was out. And the pastor said, what the hell? I said, hey, Dago. What did you say? I said, Dago. He says, okay, what do you mean? I said, you missed the play. Why the heck don't you just say you missed it? I said, I'll get the hell out of here. He said, I didn't miss it. I said, all right.
Huh.
Understand that, yes. So it was on television. I didn't swear, fortunately, neither did he. So they were using this as a confrontation without expressing vulgarity. So I said, I'll give you a look. So in Philadelphia, they had a stationary camera right over the home plate on the upper deck there, middle deck there. So he's in there next series, and I'm like, we're talking. Fine, fine, fine. So I thought, second, third, fourth, pitch, whatever. I turned around and I said, Mr. Umpire, I think you're wrong. He said, what do you mean I'm wrong? Well, sir, I said, that ball was not here, wasn't here. Then I think you missed the pitch. He said, what are you talking about? And with that, he's going around. They always get away from him. They go and strike the plate. Now his face is right at the camera, see? And I said, they couldn't see her. You goddamn Dago. I said, you missed another. He says, goddamn, you don't you tell me that. I said, I'll throw you out of here. I said, I'll tell you what, Arthur. I just cost you $50. He said, what? Sure enough. They said, get $50 for swear. He never let that up. Every time he'd see me, he'd cuss me and say, "The camera on?"
Where did Mr. Max sit in the dugout?
Right on the end of it. Towards the place he'd come up.
Now you're on the third base side?
No, I'm on the third base side.
Third base side. And that would be on the home plate end of it?
Yeah, he'd sit on that.
Would be on the home plate end of it?
Yeah, he'd sit on that end of it. Because the steps from the dugout to go that way. He'd sit right on the end.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he'd sit in the middle. It all depends when he walked in and sat out. But usually he was down that end.
And wouldn't move?
Not very often.
Yeah. No,
not, it was tough to move in those dugouts. You'd get up, oh, and bang the head on it.
Would he still wave in the scorecard?
Yeah, he would wave his scorecard. And I talked to Simmons about that. And Al said at one time we recognized that this was something he knew. And he knew, of course, his pitcher, the situation.
Mm-hmm.
He'd get up and go like that. They'd move over. And he said sometimes, mm-hmm. I'm right there.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, I don't think it was any intent of moving players. It was just abandoning himself.
Mm-hmm. Just habit, maybe.
Just habit, yeah.
Been doing it for 50 years.
At one time, it probably had some...
Yeah.
Something that really meant something to where he's moving the player.
And was he keeping score with a pencil until the end?
I didn't see him do that in the years I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see him keep any scores. Earlier, he probably did.
Oh, he did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. No, I don't recall him sitting there...
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but I don't recall seeing him do that.
No, I don't recall seeing a pencil in his hand.
No, not
keeping score. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did that for
many years. Yeah, that's right.
Did you ever meet Mrs. Mack?
Yes, I did.
What was the occasion?
Just
at the ballpark?
At the ballpark, yeah. Mm. Not in anything formal or anything intended. Just, I just like it. You'd see him coming in the park and going out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted to try.
Mm.
Spring training, we'd see her because she'd sit down there with him. Right there, as I was going to stand and shake.
Mm-hmm.
I could just see her sitting there.
While he was managing, would he be sitting out by the field in the sun?
Well, yeah. Well, he'd sit on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Spring training. I had pictures with my kids and so forth. Yeah, he'd sit there.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoyed it. And the other guy, Roy, was up the Earl now, he was up in the stands, Grant Chester, taking the sun. So he was there. Taking the sunshine.
And hot sun and all, the blue suit and the high collar and the whole work.
Yeah. Very seldom would he take his jacket off. Once in a while, probably.
Yeah, hanging in the back of the dugout.
No, I mean in spring training.
Oh, spring training.
I don't recall any time during the season, though, that he would take a jacket off.
Mm.
I can't remember him taking that off, no. But I can recall.
Well, it's remarkable when you think about it. Sitting out there in that sun all every day, spring training. Being friendly with people.
Yeah, he was a good man for baseball.
Yeah.
Overall, he was a good man for baseball. Church going, you know, family man.
Yeah.
Good guy for baseball. That's right.
Mm-hmm. And always by writer. We never knew him or anything. Always portrayed as the tight-fisted, miserly, stingy Mr. Mack, along with Clark Griffin. Always. I see that. All kinds of
books and articles. They're also the Griffins.
Yeah. Yeah. And they both supported vast, extended families and relatives.
All the Griffins were adopted.
Yeah. And he was supporting all of them, and Mack was supporting all kinds of...
Well, the whole thing, the ball club supported it. And when it got into financial straits, after he sold concessions, he had no more real general income.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't the fact that anybody would get a nickel out of it. As I said earlier, almost like five different families that were involved.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
over the years.
Mm-hmm. Was he considered tightest at miserly by the players? 47?
Oh,
50?
I would think there was conversation about it. Yeah, some kind of pretty open market. Hey, in all probability.
That's because he didn't have the money.
Didn't
like any
money.
Business.
That's right. But the other part was when I read another book of business, when I saw the salaries they were getting in those 28s and 29s and 30s, $60,000, $70,000.
When he had it, he paid it.
Yeah, that's right.
But he's never been able to shake that.
But each time he did that, if you'll refer to that, each time he did that, broke up his ball club.
Yeah.
Each time he did it.
Well, the depression was one of those times.
Yeah. But finally, the last one, of course, was our hero there, 47 to 54.
Yeah. Connie Jr. told me that he had the backing that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he went to Roy and Earl and said, "You buy me out or I'll buy you out."
That's true. That.
And he didn't think they could come up with the money. And he was shocked when they went out and borrowed it from the Connecticut General Life Insurance Company. And that's when everything went into mortgage, including the
concessions.
Yeah. And otherwise, he would have bought it and it would have stayed.
Right.
Yeah.
It would have been there forever. Because with that kind of money, they didn't make damn sure they had the best of luck.
Yeah.
No, Connie Jr. always told me that. He gave up. He said, "Earl and Roy wouldn't go on."
Yeah, they never got along.
Terrible.
Never got along. Because he was a little younger, the second family. And
yeah, that's it. The family difference.
He was the kid to them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, he was sharper than either one of them. He was the kid. And sad situation.
Yeah, because Roy did something to try to be part of the organization that the other guy would do. He would be the Simmons. No, he was scared to death. He didn't know what to say or how to do it. He got involved in something. Put up somebody else. He'd do it. He'll get that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those are things I heard from Simmons and Cochran.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fox and those guys talking about it. Just the losing. No way he could win that. No way.
Mm-hmm. I think that Mr. Knight realized finally that he was not going to have the successor in the family.
Well, he knew
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Early he thought, well, someday Earl will succeed.
Yeah, but he could not have been in his right mind not knowing how insignificant he was at all times. He didn't want to challenge anything. He was afraid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He was afraid to, even coaching. He'd be afraid to go to first base to coach. That's what they tell me. They didn't want to go out there.
What can a first base coach do? What can a first base coach do?
Just not watch the pitcher. If you're a base runner, you don't watch the pitcher, you're in trouble. That's all he does. And then batting practice, pitches batting practice, it's infield, it's outfield. But again, I'm playing with the hell he got the job. But I'm one of six, seven coaches on the ball club now. All specials.
And I don't know what a first base coach does today.
That's all he does that I know. Well, other than things he has to do. Bring the balls out for batting practice.
Yeah. Great.
Pitch batting practice, hit infield, hit outfield, and say yes to the manager.
Yeah.
And now the other thing, too, is today, with the salaries that are exaggerated, I don't begrudge them the money in any way. After all, the ball club's stupid enough to get involved in things like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's their problem.
Mm-hmm.
And now collusion is a word that is prevalent in all conversations.
Yeah.
No matter how they try to do it, it's collusion. And the only way I say, reference again to this free agency stuff, is just for let them sit there. But then right away, up comes Donald Fear and says, "Oh, it's collusion. These guys got together." That's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Each ball club says, "Hey, I've got my players. I don't need anybody.
I got a budget. I can't afford them."
Yes, I can't afford these guys. Let them sit there. Let that happen one time with about, 7,500 guys on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just let them sit there. That's all. No one wants them because we can't afford you. don't know what's wrong with saying that.
They would lose in court.
Yeah, that's true. But the point is, why would they lose in court? If you can't afford to pay someone an exorbitant salary...
They would lose in court because the players, agents, and lawyers are smarter than theirs.
And the union.
They're smarter than theirs.
The mistake they made, as far as I'm concerned, is allowing them, I say allowing, for they to form a union and owners accept it. They had the association, which was collectively all the players, and all if they got in trouble, like they used to tell us, I was rep for a while and get meetings with the owners and so forth and so on. I made a suggestion one time, and it was about, again, going back to playing in the wintertime. All the foreign players, shall I call them, were able to play get all the money they wanted, play all the American players couldn't play 30 days after the season. So I was a rep, and I think it was in New York. And they asked, what reference you have to the meeting that we could talk about, and if you could make some action. And I brought this up. And I'm making a little speech there online. I said, these guys are allowed, we're not allowed, they're foreigners, we're homegrown players, we can't make an extra buck in the wintertime, which we need. And now you're telling me that I'd be suspended from baseball if I continue. And
Cameron?
No. The guy who owned the Browns for a while.
DeWitt?
Bill.
DeWitt?
DeWitt. He said, let me say something, Ed. Do you mind? I said, no. He said, he's right. And with that, everybody looks up and says, what do you mean he's right? Well, he's right. Why do you give the privilege to... And he stuck up for him. And then we sat down, he said, and the next time you come here, you have something like this that you might challenge the rules or regulations, bring a lawyer. Because the only time I would say something, the lawyer would say, they'd say, just a moment, we got to talk to my lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, how the hell am I going to do that? I don't have a lawyer. I said, you would tell me. He says, next time you show up, get a guy. He said, he'll do it for nothing. Just to get in on this, all this conversation, probably some business someplace out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after that, I never had any questions about it. But I remember that distinctly. And no one would say, well, you're right. Except do it. You haven't said he's right. Didn't do anything.
The owner's lawyers have lost every court action that they've ever been in. They've been losing for 100 years.
Well, the big one was allowing this escalation of salaries.
The arbitration stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which they gave them.
Terrible. And these guys are business people. They're not just family-oriented like the others.
Mm-hmm.
These are guys in big business.
Yeah.
Jeez, just like the ball club in Boston now. What'd they pay? $660 million.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. Now they've got a new ballpark.
Oh, yeah.
Gee, that's Christmas.
Yeah.
And the other thing you have to argue like crazy about was our pension. I'll never forget that.
Oh, yeah, you were there when that
started.
Yeah.
Lopez came into our clubhouse. We were on a spring training. We were over playing the Pirates. And he came in the clubhouse and said, I got something to talk to you guys about, a pension. You guys want a pension? We said, oh yeah, we have a pension. So he gave us a presentation. And he said, let's put it this way. He said, we get nothing now. Let's make a presentation. And he read it all out to us. Bottom line, minimum $100 a month at age 50. Oh, geez, that was great. Those people, well, we were getting $10,000, $12,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, now the only problem is that we have to do it as of this day. This is April 27th. And either you want to join it or not. Now, of course, at 250, we join up. If the men aren't, it's accelerated or decelerated. All depends on the years in baseball. Well, it's all right with me, like $100 a month. Right, that's big money.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I put in my 250. But a lot of guys didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who are squawking like crazy. Anyway, now to continue that. So now I'm out in Luna, 50 years old. And I'm working out there, making good money. Anyway, it seems like 50 years old, I'm a pensioner. I got to do now. I said, holy mackerel. So I got on the phone and called Cleveland. So I said, lady, who's still there? I'm trying to think of her. She's been there for 100 years. So I said, this is Eddie Juice. I'm here in Luna. And I said, I'm 50 years old this is a different issue. Oh, yeah, that's fine, yeah. Congratulations. I said, congratulations, yeah. I said, what about my pension? He said, what do you mean? I said, well, should I take it or not? He said, you better take it. Is it going to increase? I said, what do you mean? Well, what I've seen over the last few years, it's paltry. I think you're better off taking it. I said, how much is it? It's $267 a month. I said, oh, what the hell, I'll take it. I didn't think it was going to increase. No way. No, no way at all. Okay. I sent me the forms, I signed. Crescetti did the same thing. He talked to her. And she told him the same thing. And he stayed in for 34 more years. Every time I talked to him, he said, holy mackerel, how stupid you would be. But anyway, then we've been fighting. I've been fighting that thing ever since. Early Wynn and I used to go, oh, man. Every week we'd get involved. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I've got letters in there from Early Wynn about our pension plan. And those buggers, they chopped us off. Just before 60, in the early 60s, just no more increases. That's the truth. They just chopped us off. I've been fighting them ever since. Every time I talk to anybody in the upper echelon of baseball, I just say, the hell with what you're paying these guys. What about us? I said, I just want parity. I have 15 and a half years credited to my baseball career, and I'm getting $3 a week, and this guy's getting $4 million a week. What the hell is it? I got to get something.